Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly officer's call and then call to quarters for muster. My greetings today go to all of Captain Joe's people who are grieving over something. I've had a couple of signals during the last week, and although I'm not going to go into any details and certainly not with names, I want all hands to know that if you are grieving, and there are all kinds of things over which we grieve. We grieve over the loss of a loved person or a loved pet, or for any number of other reasons. And know that all of you who are grieving, feeling sad, missing someone or something in your life, know that you are all in the palm of my hand. The binnacle list today is ever better, except for my good friend Captain O'Brien, who was sitting across from me just a few minutes ago, and we were talking about his continuing challenges and struggles with joints and aches and pains, and that things need to get better. So all of you who are on the binnacle list and are getting better, I hope it is because we are paying attention to the things that need to be done. And I hope that by listening to me, to your Captain Joe, on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, and streaming live all over the world to all of Captain Joe's people who are grieving, to all of Captain Joe's people who are happy today because the sun is shining here on the magical Isle of Vashon, and that you are listening to me streaming live on voiceofvashon.org. And there I've gotten the obligatory station identification out of the way. I had a signal from a constant and loyal listener with a request. And that request had to do with the Coast Guard Cutter Eagle. In one of my previous broadcasts, maybe even as late as last week, I had said that I would talk a little bit about Eagle, and in particular in the context of why the Coast Guard continues to train in sail. And so I'm going to relate that to my personal experience. When one goes to the Coast Guard Academy, and I went when I was still 17, and I walked through the gate, hiked through the gate at New London, and I knew that I was in the right place. What I did not know was how terrified I was going to be when faced with the prospect of climbing the foremast in Eagle. Every cadet climbs. Every cadet sails in Eagle. In my cadet 4 years, I trained in her four cruises, two shorter cruises and then two much longer cruises that took up most of the summer to Europe. In my first long cruise, when I was a third class, in other words, on the outside, a sophomore, my second year. I had survived my fourth class year, my SWAB year, and we were going to make the long cruise to Eagle. But by that time, I had already made that first climb all the way to the truck, which is the very top of the mast. It's 150 feet from the truck of the foremast and the mainmast all the way to the water service. In those days, we did not have any preventers. We did not have any safety gear. You climbed and you held on, and more than just one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship. You made sure that your feet were firmly planted on the foot rope. There are only a few ropes rather than lines. The foot rope is one of them. You stand on the foot rope as you're leaning over the yard to hand the sails, especially when you're furling. So each new cadet has a upperclassman to go with him. And my upperclassman became a friend he was a second classman, 2 years senior to me. And he became a friend for the rest of his life. So we climbed together, and I was certainly not Captain Joe then. I was just Wubold. We climbed together, and we went up to the first platform. And he said, when you become skilled at this, you will not go up through the lubber hole. You'll swing around the outside. And I said, no, sir, I'm never going to get that confident with it. I was absolutely terrified. And if there's ever a way to learn to confront your fears, Eagle is it. And he said, all right, we're going to stop here, and we're going to rest, and we're going to admire the view of the academy, because Eagle was tied up at the academy. She was getting ready to make her short cruise. She had just come back from her long cruise. This was at the end of the summer, before the beginning of the first academic term. And then we're going to climb up, and we're going to keep on climbing, and we're going up to the top. And that's exactly what we did. And so, having made that first climb, the next time was when Eagle was underway, and my sail station was on the topmost yard, the Royal Yard. And I must confess that my fears, not to the same degree, came back. This time I had no upper class cadet to go with me. I had my own classmates to go with me as we went up, because it was time to let go the royal sails, because Eagle, of course, sails. We shut the engine down once we get clear of the harbor, and she sails. The Royal Yard is about 130 feet above the water. A small difference between the truck and the Royal Yard. So on the fore yard, and this was on the foremost, the sails are the main or core, the main, the lower topsail, the upper topsail, the lower topgallant, spelled T-O-P-G-A-L-L-A-N-T, topgallant, upper topgallant, and the fifth and upper sail is called the royal. There is another yard and sail above that in some sailing ships called the skysail. But Eagle has five. She has split topsails, she has split topgallants, and she has a single royal. It's a long way. And in those days, we had no safety line. Some years after I graduated and no longer climbed Eagle, a cadet fell and died. And that was the motivator, so that cadets today have a safety line. Cadets today also do not sleep in hammocks. when I was a cadet. If you were in the underclass, you slept in hammocks. And the reveille call was, reveille, reveille, up all hands. Lash and stow all hammocks. Clean sweep down, fore and aft. The traditional call in sailing ships to rouse out the hands for the day's work. I'm going to talk more in a future broadcast about the philosophy of using sail training. I'm a great believer in it. Having trained an eagle myself, having survived the climb, and then having continued to climb when my sail station was up in the upper reaches. But I hope that this is in response to the query that I had, and I leave that then with the promise that we'll talk some more about training in sail, what a good thing it is, because one of the things that came out of it for me was that not very long after my first sea tour, after I graduated the academy, I had my first command tour, and it was there that I learned the captain's corollary to a couple of my other rules, and that is that the captain shall show no fear. The captain may be just as frightened as everybody else, but he cannot, or she cannot, show any fear, because that will transmit itself down to the most junior man in the ship in about 30 seconds, and then all things fall apart. The next thing that I want to talk about has to do something that we have talked about here before, and that is that a couple of weeks ago, the Navy relieved not just a commanding officer, not just a captain of a destroyer, but relieved the squadron commodore, squadron commander, the squad dog. As is customary and has now become almost a tradition, the Navy only says that his boss has lost confidence in his ability to command. This leads me to a remark, again, of something that I've said once or twice before, and that is, I wonder how the Navy is vetting their commanding officers. Here we have about, so far this in this fiscal year, which began on the 1st of October, something like 15 commanding officers that have been relieved. And now a destroyer squadron commander, a squad dog. So how is the Navy vetting all of these people that are being put into the most precious and should be the most sought after jobs in either the Navy or the Coast Guard? Certainly the most sought after by me. I don't know how the Navy does it. I know how we have done it when I was on active duty, and that was a very careful examination of the entire record. And we also started command experience early on. I had my first command when I was 23. I was the only officer. I was the captain. I had two chief petty officers who raised me, and I had 15 hands. And I was the captain of a small patrol cutter out of San Diego, but small only in size. She was only 95 feet long. But she was completely self-contained and could and did go on search and rescue cases over 1,000 nautical miles away from San Diego. And then at each rank level, I had another command at sea, so that altogether I had 6 sea commands, culminating in my icebreaker, my much-loved North Wind. My guess is that the Navy, for reasons which are not clear to me, and I'm hoping that the new Chief of Naval Operations is going to take this on board and recognize that if you start captains out young and you give them chief petty officers to help raise them, that they're going to develop those skills not only of piloting and navigation and all of the basic skills that they should be learning at the Naval Academy or at Officer Candidate School, but they also are learning the captain shall show no fear and learning all of the other things that go with being a commanding officer and having the privilege of commanding. And that goes all the way up to the captains of aircraft carriers where they have 5,000 people. But the principles are exactly the same. I take hope from the fact that in the Navy Times, the newspaper for the Navy, the Coast Guard, and the Marine Corps, there's an article in which a retired Navy captain is saying the Navy needs to stiffen its whole approach to the vetting of commanding officers, and I could not agree more. And, Captain, I would carry it one step further, and what the Navy needs to do is to start commanding officers are with smaller ships. There are some wonderful commands in the mine force, for example. And in the patrol force, so there are commands out there for young officers. And that's where it is bad Navy, it is bad seagoing policy for a commanding officer to have his first command as a destroyer captain in a very complicated ship, very powerful and complicated ship. We've seen that happen in two cases, in the McCain and in the Fitzgerald cases. Both of them, as I recall, were first, those were their first commands. In the book is called, this week is called Into the Raging Sea. It's by a woman by the name of Rachel Slade, and it is the story of the sinking of El Faro. You all will recall my discussion about the sinking of El Faro, about the captain who drove his ship into a hurricane, an Atlantic hurricane, and she rolled over with the loss of all hands. I cannot recommend the book from the point of view of technical accuracy, because there are a number of inaccuracies, a number of things that are just not right, just not correct factually. I do not believe that Rachel is a sailor. I haven't looked her up in any of the, other than the biography of her in the book itself. And there's no indication that she is a sailor. It's no indication that she's ever been to sea. There's no indication that she's ever been in a hurricane or a typhoon herself. I, of course, have been all of those things. And so I read books like this with a great deal of critical concern. I'm not recommending the book because of its technical accuracy. I'm not recommending it for its literary skills because it's poorly written. But it does tell the story of El Faro. And if you are interested in that particular case, then you should get a copy of this book, but not necessarily to buy it. I'm bringing it up now because a friend here on the island bought and gave me a copy of it and wants to talk about it after I have finished it, and I am about three-quarters of the way through it now. We're going to have that time together in which I will talk about the from a search and rescue professional. It talks about how the search was organized. I've done that. I have been a search and rescue mission coordinator. I've been an on-scene commander. And so she and I are going to have this discussion, and I will talk about it more on the broadcast. But in the meantime, know that this book is there. It's called, Into the Raging Sea. And the on the back of it, it proclaims itself to be a national bestseller. I don't know what bestseller list it's on. And then the last sentence in the little flak piece, it says, relying on extensive investigator reporting, as well as the words of the doomed mariners themselves. She got this from the voice recorder up on the bridge. Rachel Slade unravels the mystery behind this tragedy. Well, there's no mystery to it. There's no mystery to the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. When things like the advertising for a particular book or for a particular film or documentary says a mystery, especially when it's a seagoing mystery, I always look at that with some skepticism, and I'm looking at this with some particular skepticism. But it is the book this week, Into the Raging Sea by Rachel Slade. The Navy has just commissioned, or is getting ready to commission, another one of the littoral combat ships, this time the USS Kingsville. Her hull number is LCS-36. She's to be home ported in San Diego. And when I was in San Diego a few weeks ago, one of the places that I went was on to the Naval Station San Diego, the same place where Bonhomme Richard burned to death. And one of the things that I saw there was that there were six of these LCSs in commission, lined up alongside the waterfront. And now they're going to add the USS Kingsville to that group. And at the same time, they are decommissioning. Down at the bottom, they're taking them out at the bottom and commissioning them at the top. How long is Kingsville going to be in commission? And what is she going to do? It remains to be seen. I bring it up here because my disdain for these ships and for the way that they were planned and the purpose for which they were built, none of that has come to pass. And yet, we commissioning USS Kingsville LCS-36 and decommission one or two down at the bottom. Egypt is studying some further expansion of the Suez Canal. You remember when the Evergreen fleet, Ever Forward, ran aground and blocked the Suez Canal. This one's interesting to me because the traffic through the Suez Canal has dropped off dramatically in the last 2 years because of the Houthi attacks on them in the Red Sea, on ships that use the Suez Canal in the Red Sea. And it's going to be a difficult thing for the Egyptians to come up and fund any expansion to take even larger ships and move ships through more frequently. They're going to have to build up the traffic. And the other canal that is also having trouble, that's the Panama Canal. It's having trouble because they don't have enough water. Water, fresh water. When we go through the Panama Canal, by the way, here's a little piece of nautical arcana for you. If you are in a saltwater ship, a ship that's been in salt water, you go through the Panama Canal and use the fresh water that comes out of Gatun Lake. You run it through the ship's piping systems, and that flushes out and kills a lot of the marine growth that has gotten going up inside. When I took Northwind up into the Great Lakes, we flushed out all of the water systems, all of the piping, all of the ones that carry salt water, particularly the fire main systems, because they get, when they're in salt water, there's marine growth that grows inside those pipes, and you flush it all out with fresh water. It's a great thing to have happen. Marine traffic. On the federal anchorage right off of Captain Quarters is the Marina One. She is flagged in the Marshall Islands, And she's only 9 years old, but she looks like she's about 50 years old. She looks really, really rough. This is a demonstration of ships which are foreign flagged, which have the absolute minimum number of people to conform with the International Maritime Organization manning standards. And she's carrying nobody to do any kind of shipboard maintenance. She is waiting to get alongside in Tacoma to load some kind of bulk material. She's Greek ownership. She's insured in the UK. She is flagged in the Marshall Islands. And she originally, when she was built, she was in the Bahamas flag. So she has been waltzed around both as to flag, as to owners. And if she is in any kind of an accident, she is also going to be overseen and investigated by at least 4 different countries. I always think that's interesting, and I bring it up here a couple of times. Next week, I will be in the Washington, D.C. area, and Captain O'Brien will be engineering for me. And I am going to seeing some of Captain Joe's people who are hopefully about ready to leave the binnacle list. And I have one other thing that I have a quick note about, and that is that if you are a holder of a Merchant Marine credential, if you, what we used to call a Merchant Mariner's document, the National Maritime Center, which is commanded by a Coast Guard captain, and is the organization that handles the examination and licensing of merchant marine personnel officers and the documentation of those who are not officers, they are issuing a new merchant mariner credential. It is to be printed on synthetic paper. Now, what is synthetic paper? I would think all paper is synthetic. It does not grow on trees just by itself. We take pulp and we make it into paper. So I'm not sure what is synthetic paper. But the Coast Guard is going to be printing these new documents on synthetic paper. And if you are a holder, you can go on to the National Maritime Center's website and learn more about it. And with I've got 1 minute here to say one other thing. The Navy is dealing with all of these robotics, and in order to handle them correctly, they have created a new enlisted rating. And that rating is the Robotics Warfare Rating. And there is a Master Chief in the Robotic Warfare Rating. Now, I was raised by a Chief Bosun's mate. And he was ably assisted by a Chief Engineman. Now we call them machinery technicians. But he was a Chief Engineman. I like being around Chief Bosun's mates. I like being around Master Chiefs. And I don't know what a robotics warfare Master Chief is going to do. I don't know what his place in the hierarchy is. But Chief, Master Chief, I wish you well. And on that, this is your Captain Joe. Once again, we have come to the end of our time together. And I've not covered nearly all the things that I wanted to get to. Maybe sometimes I talk too much about a particular one. I know all of you out there will let me know. And in the meantime, I remain, as always, on station and watching properly. I'll be talking to you next week from somewhere in Washington, D.C. And as always, all of you have my love, my affection, my regard, and my respect. And you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.